when we did last speak, you hadn't even started X2, and you were on the set in Vancouver. So now you're back working with Bryan Singer again on the latest film, Valkyrie. What else besides working with Bryan again? Was there anything else in the film that appealed to you about working on it?
Well, we had just first of all, I was pretty surprised that we'd be working together so quickly after Superman, because usually I say, please go away for a couple of years so I can go score some movies. and then I got this call. It wasn't too much longer. Too long after we finished Superman, I got this call. And, of course, I just, I don't particularly enjoy going off to what I call editing jail for a year. So, because I can't score any films, so when I got the call, I was initially not excited to do it. But he promised me it'd be a short little stint, and I'd be in and out in 6 months. Of course, a year and a half later, I just finished it. But what was interesting about this one is what got me initially excited about it was that it was not a heavily CGI film where I'm editing to a bunch of green screens, which can be really drab as an editor sometimes. Mm-hmm. I get to look at people in their full regalia and uniforms, and the sets are done, and so as I'm watching the dailies, I actually feel like I'm in the world of the movie. So as an editor, it made it more fun to tell the story with all the visuals there most of the time, because we do some CGI work. And then the other was the fact that we're going back to our roots and doing an ensemble piece, which was a thriller, and with the same group of people, meaning the same writer, mm-hmm. Chris McCrory, and the DP, and Tom Siegel, and Bryan, and me doing editing the music. So it was like we were kind of going back to our roots again, which was sort of what I thought would be the fun part of it. Never realizing how difficult of a movie this was going to be to actually pull off.
So now, what influenced your approach to the score?
Basically, to two things. To A, do what would be expected for a movie that you are interpreting as when you know as a World War II movie. Yet, mm-hmm. but and going more modern in approach to the music, because it's basically a thriller. It's a suspense thriller with a historical backdrop.
Right.
And because that's what we see the film as, that the music needed to confirm that as well. And help it be a thriller. The challenge of the music was to have it eventually evolve surreptitiously into a tragedy, and without feeling like that comes out of the blue. So the music didn't have to tell a story. And then the other part of the musical concept was the fun part for me was doing it sort of in the spirit of vintage 70s thriller movies, and we were all pretty much on the same page as that, because Tom Cruise and Bryan Singer and Chris McCrory and I are basically pretty much the same age, and we all think the heyday of movies and movie music is the mid-70s to late-70s, and so I knew right away that if I started writing the score in the spirit of Goldsmith's thriller, that we would be pretty much on the same page. I just and that's pretty much my passion as a film composer anyway, keeping that stylistic scoring alive, but having a feel updated for now, so it doesn't feel like I'm lost the past, but basically having the same sensibilities as those guys, Goldsmith and Williams, but keeping it feeling contemporary.
So now, this film is a historically based drama, do you approach it any differently than you would a fictional drama?
Well, a story is a story, and this emotional story just happens to be a true story. And so I would just score it like I would any thriller. In terms of constructing the film as the editor, of course, we always had to be very conscious of historical accuracy. Mm-hmm. And in terms of how it was shot, every department had to be very careful. And it became almost a paranoia on the film. And we set out to make this fun little thriller, but then we got ourselves caught up in this very important historical event, mm-hmm. and suddenly had to stop and breathe and pause for a moment. Wait a minute, we better really be careful here. And we were shooting, of course, in Berlin, so we were surrounded by a lot of Germans who were, of course, this story is extremely well known there. Mm-hmm. We got the sense of just how important it is to them, especially this character played by Tom, Klaus von Stauffenberg, who's one of the national heroes. So it's almost, something you don't want to, take too many liberties with, because it's like you don't want to be respectful of what happened.
Exactly. So now, is there a formula that you follow for the war film, the drama, that kind of thing?
Well, if there is, it's what I tried not to follow. I mean, from day one, I just didn't want this to be Winds of War or some epic big World War II score that fit into a cliche category. I wanted this to feel like try to be more timeless, and then you could put the score on a thriller of any time frame and have it work. I mean, I did put some electronics in with the orchestra very subtly to give it sort of a slight modern edge to it, but it's done in a classic way that probably could work on any classic thriller. You know, it wouldn't work as well as it works on Valkyrie because it was written for Valkyrie.
Right.
But you know what I mean. It was less about the history and more about the suspense. It's all about music in this movie. It's all about literally being the heartbeat of the film.
Mm-hmm. Now, the opening cue has a little bit of a choral element to it.
Yeah, a lot.
Oh, well, yeah.
That's actually the end title music of the movie. The movie doesn't have an opening title sequence. It just goes right into the action. And it was very... It's amazing how tricky it was to actually figure out what the tone of the end titles was going to be. Because
mm-hmm.
the end of the movie, of course, is very emotional. And then if you start doing the exact same thing in your end title role, it's just going to have too much of a sameness for the audience, and it's not going to really bring them to another place or have them be thoughtful about what they just saw. And so to come up with an end title piece was really difficult as to what the tone would be. What do you want to hear as they're walking away? And so anything that orchestral, in a sensitive way, felt like more of the same. So I thought, what can I do to make this feel different but still feel somehow emotional and yet all oddly uplifting, because basically these guys died heroes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to... I'm not trying not to be eloquent about this. You don't want to leave depressed. You want to leave emotional but somehow oddly uplifted that they tried their best and that they were heroes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found that just doing something choral gave it a whole different feeling. But then the challenge was, what the heck would they be saying? You know, a cohort and I worked on this thing, and we found a friend of ours who came up with the idea of using some lyrics from the poet, German poet, you know, Goethe.
Mm-hmm.
These lyrics that he found were basically could be loosely applied to the film as an allegory.
Okay.
It was about little birds falling silent in the woods, and the last phrase of the poem is "Soon you too will be at rest." And I thought, wow, it's just sort of like, without nailing it on the nose, without being right on the nose,
mm-hmm.
I thought that it gave a nice nod to these heroes at the end of the movie.
So, what were the some of the biggest challenges in creating this score?
I would say keeping it subliminal, and yet have it literally be the pulse of the movie without getting in the way. And fortunately, I'm also in charge of the dub, being the editor, so I purposefully composed it to be intertwined with a lot of the sound effects I'd done in the editing room.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just a lot of music. I tell people, when I originally cut the film, I cut it dry. I don't cut to any music. I just, the whole thing is nothing, no music in it at all. And I was thinking, oh, maybe it'll be like 20 minutes of score, maybe. It's just not that kind of movie. And then, of course, we just found the power of having this pulse, and it just really made the film more kick-ass. And so we ended up being like 100 minutes of score.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually believe less is more, but it's so subliminal at times. I'm trying to make my answers more concise. The challenge was having a shitload of music not feel like a shitload of music. So there was one challenge. And the other challenge was having it, like I said before, surreptitiously evolve into an emotional piece from a thriller.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people may not be aware that, and we've sort of touched on this, but a lot of people may not be aware that you're also a film editor, and often on the films that you score as well. So how does this help you when it comes time to finally score the film?
You know, I said, now that I look back at my career, it's pretty much a wash in terms of how much it helps me. I would like to say that, you know, as I'm cutting the film, all these musical ideas are swirling through my head, and so I'm kind of thinking of the music as I'm cutting, but it's just not the case. Editing is an all-encompassing task, and I may subliminally know that I'm creating pregnant areas for score, and so forth, because, again, the great editors are great storytellers, and so they'll intentionally create those pauses, those peaks and valleys for the composer or for the story. But what that music is going to be in those areas, I don't have the slightest idea until I start writing. I do know generally, you know, it's going to be the approach I'm going to take is a more modern approach, a more pulsating approach. But the reason it's a wash is because I may have more time to think about it, being on the film for so long, but the actual act of writing the music, I have so little time compared to what most composers would have. Because if I were just the editor on a project, I would have hired my composer 2 months before I ever get started on the film as a composer. So I literally have hardly any time to actually write, and then I'm constantly pulled in, you know, a multitude of directions as I'm trying to write the score. I'd like to close the door and shut the film off for a month and a half and write the score, but that's impossible being the editor. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm yanked over for ADR sessions with the actors, or doing some recutting, or having another test screening, any myriad of reasons I get yanked away from writing the music.
So now, as a composer, your job, of course, is to write music. But
right.
do you also use silence as a composing tool?
Well, that's the most, as any composer who really cares about what they're doing will tell you, yes, that's the most powerful thing you can do as a composer, and it really depends on the project and whether you can get away with it or not. And we certainly used areas like that in Valkyrie, and I think it's always the goal, at least for me, to do that. I mean, that's why I cut the entire film without any score whatsoever until I had to temp it at the very last second, because I want to be able to fully explore all those silent moments without being trapped into having had a temp score and forgetting the fact that, you know, those moments are sometimes the most powerful moments. I mean, the most cliche silent moments, of course, are the ones before a big scare. You know, you bring all the sound down, and blam, you scare the crap out of everybody. That's the cliche one. But there are a lot of moments where you try to use silence. You know,
I touched briefly on the soundtrack release, and I mentioned that I made the mistake of saying that the first cue on there was the opening cue. Actually, it isn't. You mentioned.
When you put an album together, you know, it's got to be more interesting to listen to, and so almost no cue is in film order, as you know. And with this movie, because it starts out very subliminally, the score, and it just grows, as the movie itself does, actually, that it would be really boring to listen to the cues in the order they were in the movie. So, and because that's where the score was headed, was to that last piece of music, I just really wanted to start the movie out with. You know, I didn't want people to be so bored by that, like, by the time they got to the end of the album, they wouldn't even listen to the last year.
Because technology is constantly changing in your business, and both an editor and as a composer, what do you do to stay on top of the changing trends?
Not as much as I should. I get really comfortable with the setup I have and the programs I have and the sounds I have, and a lot of times I will resist new technology kicking and screaming until I got to use it. I mean, I was probably a year and a half behind everyone with digital video. I was still pushing rewind and fast forward on my VHS tape like an idiot, you know. And then once I got digital video, I realized basically I could write a score in half the time. And so I try to have the people around me that work with me to sort of pressure me into buying new stuff. But I don't know. I will just sometimes I'll get a demo from some new composer. You know, that they'll give me his stuff to maybe want to work with me, and it'll sound so great. I'll go, well, where the hell did you get these samples? You know, and they'll go, oh, well, you know, it's such and such. I'm like, oh, man, I better start buying some new stuff, you know. So then I go buy some new things. But I also am a believer in if it broke, don't fix it. So I don't want to, I mean, my writing studio is very simple. At the end of the day, it's still coming from my head. So I pretty much use the same, you know, music writing software, which is Performer, that I've used forever, and my setup really hasn't changed much except a few more sampled sounds.
Okay. Well, so what was it like working on Superman Returns, since it was also working with Brian?
Well, I have to go back to my memory bank. All I know is before I even started cutting the film, I was practically getting death threats from, you know, music fans, because, you know, if you don't use a theme, then I'm going to send you a letter bomb, you know. It's like, you know, or why the hell are you, why, you know, I'd read stuff like, why the hell is John Ovan scoring this movie, you know, why not John Williams, you know. So I was like already walking into it. Okay, I'm not worthy. You know, it's like as I started approaching writing the score, I started to become really crippled by the whole, by all the pressure and the fear of what everyone was wanting, expecting. And finally, I just had to free myself of it. And I just said, you know what? I'm just going to walk in this movie and score it as if I had heard no one say anything, and just do what comes to me naturally, mm-hmm. and just trust my own instincts. And that was what freed me. Otherwise, I would be crippled. I wouldn't be able to write anything. I'd be too terrified. So I just did my thing. And of course, I'm a huge fan of the original Superman and a huge fan of John Williams. And so it just came natural to give little nods here and there to the theme. And it was fun because it's such a simple theme. Mm-hmm. You can put bumpa on anything.
Right.
You know? So I just did my thing, and I had a pretty good time. Once I got into the groove of it, it was a tremendous amount of music to write. I think that was over 100 minutes of music, and you know, very complicated orchestrations and stuff.
Right. Now, one question has bothered me since I saw, or not bothered me, but actually kind of intrigued me. Very opening of the film. Just after the Warner Brothers logo, you hear a little statement of the John Williams theme.
Yeah.
Whose idea was that?
It was mine, of course.
Of course, okay. I was hoping that it was.
Well, here's the funny story behind that. There was this brilliant moment, I must say, on X-Men 2, which got cut out. It was on the edge of the on the end of the 20th Century Fox logo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, da 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 da. And I did this whole nod to the X-Men 2 theme,
mm-hmm.
and it worked brilliantly. The orchestra loved it. It was felt so organic, but it was far less subtle than the Superman one.
Right.
And suddenly memos were flying, you know, from department head to department head, and we just don't do that, you know, we don't screw the music there, and it got axed. Warner Brothers seemed to have a much more lax attitude about their logo, and so I just did it, and it stuck.
Well, that's great.
I don't even remember to this day if I said anything. I don't think I made anyone aware this time. I just did it, and we dubbed, and no one caught it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was something that I, as a moviegoer, really appreciated. I was sitting there right. going, that's cool. That's very cool. And
heard the X-Men 2 one. That was cool.
Yeah. It's interesting that you mentioned that, because Elliot Goldenthal did that for Alien 3.
That's the case we tried to make, because when all these memos are going back and forth and back and forth, I go, you know, I was trying to research precedent, and I think we brought that up, and I go, why, you know, and I said, you you changed the visuals to your 20th Century logo, so why can't you do something with the sound, you know? But, oh no, we can't do that.
Hmm. Now that Valkyrie is under your belt, what does the future hold for you?
Hawaii. Mai Tais. I don't have anything lined up right now. There's a low budget little horror film that I promised Joel Silver I would be doing, but that's sort of on hiatus right now. But other than that, I have nothing coming up to start to pound the pavement.
Well, I really appreciate the time you've given me today. And
sure, it was good talking to you. Thank you.